Welcome to the Psalm Companion for 40 Minutes in the Old Testament. The Psalm Companion and 40 Minutes in the Old Testament, of course, are 1517 Podcast Network podcast. You can go to 1517.org/podcast and check out all the things that we are doing over there. Chad, we are in Psalm number 10. We don't have no author on this one, so we don't get to. I think this is the first. Is this the first psalm that's not a Psalm of David in the Book of Psalms? I think this is right.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So is it possible it's the Psalm of David? I suppose. But we're not told that it is. And we were just chatting before how this one is funny a little bit that it's on the heels of one that we just did because the language is the same but different.
Yeah. So in Psalm 9, verse 9, it says, "The Lord is a stronghold for the oppressed. A stronghold in times of trouble," which is great. I mean, it's a wonderful comfort to us. I think we pointed that out when we recorded the episode on that psalm. So God is a stronghold in times of trouble. Now you get to Psalm 10, first verse. "Why, O Lord, do you stand far away? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble?" So which is it? Is God a stronghold for the oppressed in times of trouble? Or does God hide himself and stand far away in times of trouble? Well, it kind of depends on where you're at, right? As to which one of these you're praying. Because there have been times when I pray quite boldly that God is my stronghold in times of trouble. And there are other times when I cry out to God, why are you so far away from me? Why are you hiding yourself in my time of trouble? And, you know, that's the tension that we live in. Because And we were also discussing before we hit record that, you know, Job is kind of back and forth. At times he'll say, "God, leave me alone. Let me die. Get away from me." And then at times he wants God close to him, wants God talking to him. So that is the reality of life in a full of sin and in a life in a world full of sin and suffering. You kind of do this dance back and forth between speaking of God as a stronghold in times of trouble, and then speaking to God, why do you hide yourself in times of trouble?
Yeah, I mean, you know, God can't win with sinners. Sometimes he feels too close, and you want to be abandoned. You want to be left to despair, and he won't let you do it. And in other times, he feels very far off. Now the truth is, of course, I think that God has never really far off from those who trust him. But what is also simultaneously true is that God certainly feels far off in times of trouble quite often.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the tenor of Psalm 22 also. After that opening verse that we all know, my God, why have you forsaken me? He goes on to talk about how, why are you so far from me in this time of my trouble? You know, why when I need you close, are you not there? Why am I feeling this just increasing separation between you and me? Goes on in verse 2. "In arrogance, the wicked hotly pursue the poor. Let them be caught in the schemes that they have devised. For the wicked boast of the desires of his soul, and the one greedy for gain curses and renounces the Lord. In the pride of his face," literally, that is, in Hebrew, that's his high nose. It's kind of this idea. He's walking around all snooty, you know. He's got a high nose going on. So in his high nose, in the pride of his face, the wicked does not seek him. All his thoughts are, there is no God. You know, stop there for a second. So I think, you know, the reason this starts out the way it is, why are you so far away, God? Why are you hiding yourself in times of trouble? Is because of what he describes in verse 2, right? That these wicked are hotly pursuing the poor. Poor here is not simply those who are economically disadvantaged, but the Hebrew word here is those who are lowly, suffering. It's used in all those sorts of ways. So in arrogant, the wicked hotly pursue the poor. Let them be caught in their own schemes, more or less. This is, I think we've already encountered this a couple of different times in the Psalms, where you set a trap, you're going to get caught in it. And that's what he's asking for to happen here. Now, verse 4 says, all his thoughts are there is no God. So I don't think there is such a thing in anywhere in the scriptures of what today we might think of as philosophical atheism. But there is practical atheism, several different places in the Psalms where people live as if there is no God. In other words, if there is not going to be any accountability for what they do. So they act as if God doesn't see, act as if God doesn't care, act as if God maybe even in fact is on their side, even though they're practicing wickedness. But this phrase, there is no God, that's found a few other times in the scriptures. And it's always used in such a way as to describe those who live in such a way, speak in such a way, act in such a way that there will be no accountability for their actions, and they will get away scot-free with whatever they've done.
Yeah, I mean, the idea here, I mean, that these people are hotly pursuing the poor, and as you were saying, like, don't just think poor people, think of the powerless, right? Those with no one to represent them, no one to fight for them, the lowly, the disenfranchised, whatever. All of those people would be kind of lumped into this of the poor. They're not. It's not just that they're not. I mean, one thing, if you were, you know, of course, in Scripture, you're told to, like, look out for such people, to take care of such people. It's not just that you're not doing that. The complaint here is they're hotly pursuing them. I mean, they it's like, I can't wait to take advantage of these people. I can't get there fast enough. And this sort of activity would lead me to believe that, like, I think that you think there is no God.
Yes. Yeah. And one of the reasons they think this, verse 5, his ways prosper at all times. So they're doing well, in other words. Not only are they pursuing the poor, but they're probably catching them. They're getting what they want from them. They're taking advantage of widows and orphans and whoever else they can get something from. And it seems to be working. So their ways are prospering all the time.
Yeah, this would go to some of what we've talked about in Job too, where Job's friends are like, hey, man, good things happen to good people, bad things happen to bad people. That's how it goes. And Job says, that's not how it goes, actually. This psalmist also says that's not how it goes. He says sometimes you have people hotly pursuing the lowly, and they don't even believe there's a God, because guess what? Nothing happens except for good things to them when they do it.
Yeah, their ways prosper. While the judgments of God are on high out of his sight. So in other words, God is making his judgments. They just don't see him yet.
Yeah, they've not come. I mean, low.
They will come, but for now they're hidden from those whose evil ways are prospering. So if he sees his, as for all his foes, he scoffs at them, he puffs at them. The ESV has translated. That's a strange translation. How do you puff at someone?
Is that when somebody like rebukes you and you go? So that is.
I suppose, yeah, yeah. I get the image here, like snorting at someone, maybe something like that. I've never puffed at anyone, but that's what ESV has here. So as for all his foes, he I think New American Standard has snorts, but puffs at them. He says in his heart, I shall not be moved. Throughout all generations, I shall not meet adversity. What kind of makes me smile when I see things like this is it's almost like this guy has to convince himself, because twice he says in his heart, verse 6 and verse 11, he says in his heart, I shall not be moved. Throughout all generations, I shall not meet adversity. And then verse 11, he says in his heart, God is forgotten. He's hidden his face. He will never see it. So it's almost like, methinks thou dost protest too much. I think you're really having to convince yourself of this quite a bit. You keep saying to yourself, I'm be okay. God doesn't see. You know, he's hidden his face. I'm going to be all right. I'm not going to meet adversity. I don't know that your assurance is all that strong if you have to keep saying this in your heart.
Yes, yeah. That I think that's exactly you're trying to speak that into existence, I think.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So verse 7, his mouth is full of cursing and deceit and oppression. So under his tongue, he's like hiding under his tongue, mischief and iniquity. The Psalms are full of just gripping imagery of the mouth, the tongue, the throat. You know, that one psalm talks about their throats are an open grave. They flatter with their tongue. It's like James in the New Testament, of course, his imagery for the tongue and for the speech, the destructive speech that comes from our mouths. So the psalmist here is talking about mischief and iniquity hiding under people's tongues and their mouths full of cursing, deceit, and oppression. He sits in ambush in the villages, in hiding places. He murders the innocent. There you go. They don't just hotly pursue the afflicted. They catch them, and they're actually taking their lives. His eyes stealthily watch for the helpless. He lurks in ambush like a lion in his thicket. He lurks that he may seize the poor, and when he seizes the poor, he draws them into his net. The helpless, well, they're crushed. They sink down. They fall by his might. And then we have the verse I just quoted. He says in his heart, God is forgotten. He's hidden his face. He will never see it.
Yeah, I got to tell you, if you're doing all this, you might have to like really try to convince yourself of that. You're not talking about, kind of what I was talking about earlier. You're not talking about just like, I don't know if I've treated the poor the way that I'm supposed to. Not like some like sins of omission, but like these are some big time sins of commission right here, man.
It wasn't like I should not have just walked by that homeless guy. I really should have, given him a dollar. No, this is like you stop, you beat up the homeless guy, you slit his throat, and you took whatever, change was in his pocket. That's what's going on here.
Yeah.
These guys, man.
Yeah, the language you describe what they're doing, and you're like, you might have to do some pretty heavy self-convincing that, like, nothing bad's going to happen to me for doing, like,
no.
You better be hoping there's not a God. Like, this is, because this all seems like, this is all plotting and scheming hotly pursuing is, I suppose, the correct way to say it. Like, wow, you're really aggressively doing this day in and day out. Better for you if there was no God, probably.
Yes, for sure. So having described all that, what these guys are doing, verse 12, shift to prayer and says, arise. So wake up, get up, God, lift up your hand and forget not the afflicted. Why does the wicked renounce God and say in his heart, you will not call to account, but you do see, for you note mischief and vexation that you may take it into your hands. So the wicked are saying, you will not call to account. Why are they saying that? Well, they're saying it because, like he said earlier, God's judgments are on high, hidden out of his sight. But God will not forget the afflicted, and he's going to lift up his hand. And, when God lifts up his hands, that can be good, because sometimes with his hand, he delivers us. But sometimes when God lifts up his hands, it looks like someone running back for a big old slap.
Well, sometimes when God lifts up his hands, he's going to break your arm, which is what you're going to get in verse 15.
Yeah, right. So God notes this mischief and this vexation. The helpless, to you, the helpless commits himself. You've been the helper of the fatherless. And because of all that, when God lifts up his hand, here's what he's going to do. He's going to break the arm of the wicked and the evildoer. Call his wickedness to account till you find none. So some people are troubled by the imagery of the Psalms, like breaking people's teeth and breaking their arms and all of that. I think, first of all, you got to remember this is poetry, and poetry always leans toward the exaggerated. I mean, the hyperbole. That's just the way that poetry works. And also, I mean, when you think about the arm in the Bible, think about people's power.
Yeah,
that's what the arm is a symbol of. So, I mean, we still use that kind of language at times today, where the arm becomes a symbol for strength or something. So when we break the, when we ask God to break the arm of the wicked and the evildoer, we're doing nothing more than saying, break the power of the abusive powerful is what we're praying for. So act in such a way as to make sure that those who are engaged in these atrocious evil actions cannot do them anymore. So we're not asking God to like go all mafia and send people to the emergency room. We're asking him to incapacitate them in the sense of make them unable to continue to do the evil that they have been engaged in up to this point.
Yeah, and I think that if you're wondering like who these people are, I think this tells you exactly who it is. Like, it's to you, the helpless commits himself. So, like, what is meant by the poor? The helpless, right? And you've been the helper of the fatherless. So this would be, you know, orphans, widows, like this sort of thing. People who are helpless. By the way, committing yourself to God is a great place to commit yourself. And it's a good place to do that because in times past, God has proven that he is the helper of the fatherless. So you kind of have this thing going on where the psalmist is saying, the helpless have committed themselves to you because you have proven to be the helper of the fatherless. So, like, you're the only one that's going to be able to do this. They got nowhere else to go.
Yeah, and he has a long history of doing this, of course. Even though, some time may pass before he acts, he does not forget the cry of the afflicted forever, as I think we talked about in Psalm 9. He will act, and when he does, then he will act for those who have committed, or even, you could even translate that, abandon themselves to him. It's the idea of just kind of falling into the arms of God. And then he finishes off 16 through 18. The Lord is king forever and ever. The nations perish from his land. O Lord, you hear the desire of the afflicted. You will strengthen their heart. You will incline your ear to do justice to the fatherless and the oppressed, so that man who is of the earth may strike terror no more. So God is king, and he sees what's happening in his realm. And because of that, he's going to act on behalf of those who have committed themselves to him. He's going to strengthen their heart. He's going to listen to their cries. And in the end, he will bring about justice for the oppressed, for the fatherless, and for the suffering. And how he does this is going to, of course, vary from situation to situation. But certainly when you read Psalms like this in light of the end, then definitely God is going to bring justice at the end. But he acts even in history to do this as well, in which he thwarts the evil ways of those who are taking advantage of the powerless.
Yeah. Well, all right, man. Well, there it is. There is Psalm number 10. We'll be back with another Psalm chat. I'll see you then.